This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Domestic violence, also called intimate partner violence or relationship abuse, it's a pattern of behaviors used by one partner to maintain power and control over another partner. This includes physical, emotional, sexual, economic, and psychological abuse, as well as stalking, blackmail, and threats. It impacts mostly women, but not confined to just one gender. It also happens in every neighborhood and economic class. Across Texas, 656 women were killed by domestic partners in 2016. What are some of the warning signs? What can be done to intervene and help individuals or families who are impacted by violence in the home? Today, we want to spread the word about local help and services that are available to victims and survivors of domestic violence. Even if you were in a relationship like that and you got out of it, you still need to talk about it. You still need to have some healing done. You just can't do it by yourself, and we want to hear from you. So if you have experienced this, give us a call. Sharing your story will help others find a way to get help. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. You can remain anonymous. You don't have to give us your real name. 210-614-8980. Or you can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. With us this afternoon, we're joined by Martha Pelayas. She is the CEO of the Family Violence Prevention Service. Also with us on the line is Roy Rios, Prevention Manager for the Texas Council on Family Violence. And Martha, welcome back to The Source. Roy, it's great to have you here this afternoon. It seems like this is getting worse, Martha.
Absolutely. I have to say that just looking at the numbers that we have for this part of the year up to now, we are at 22 fatalities. Compared to last year's, as reported by the Texas Council on Family Violence, 11 fatalities. So this is double, but this is October.
And the year before that was?
12.
Wow.
12. It is very, very concerning. Very, very concerning.
What do you think is going on?
It is a question that I get quite frequently. What's going on? Why? Why does that happen? It is a number of factors that contribute to domestic violence. But I have to say that generational violence plays a very, very important role in that. If a child is growing up in a home where domestic violence is the everyday thing, that child is filling up his or her social template with behaviors that are modeled as a perpetrator or as a victim. And so when they grow up, they put those skills and those lessons that they have learned to the best use. So that's how you end up with little girls being playing the role of victims, that's what they have seen in mom. And little boys, generally, you know, they want to emulate that father, that male figure that they have had.
We have to emphasize that domestic violence, it's a men's issue. This is about men who are inadequate in the way that they deal with women on an equal basis.
I have to say, for the most part, it is. The majority of the victimization is perpetrated by men onto women. Coming up in the ranks and filling up slots in that statistic, unfortunately, is women. We also shelter men who are abused. The elderly is coming forth as a population that is having a statistic that we are following because their numbers are also growing. But let me just go back a little bit. The majority of the victims of domestic violence are not women. By far, they're not men, but they are children. So that's what I meant about generational violence. So our first line of possibilities to resolve, to dent these numbers, stands with the children.
Roy Rios is the prevention manager for the Texas Council on Family Violence. How can we prevent family violence, Roy?
You know, Modest, I really hit an important aspect of the work that we're going to do, and that's reaching out to young people. Prevention is the key to making our community safer. One of the keys to engaging communities is to develop prevention programming that really is getting to the root of the problem. And what is that problem? You all have mentioned a few things already that are really important aspects of violence prevention, and that's really unpacking and challenging the cultural dynamics that are supporting violence in the San Antonio community and communities all over Texas and all over the world. One of the most important aspects of prevention programming that needs to be done to really challenge these numbers, to challenge communities, is to really have training around rigid gender roles. Like you mentioned, it being an issue with men, one of those issues that we're seeing with that men are dealing with is the impact of masculinity on the lives of men, and really toxic masculinity, and how that impacts their views on women and girls. And what we're seeing is that toxic masculinity isn't only impacting men, but it's also impacting women and girls and how they view relationships. Prevention programming, for it to really be effective, really needs to also work at dismantling oppression in our societies. We need to challenge social norms, the practices in our communities, in our neighborhoods, the policies that are being developed right now that are directly impacting women, impacting how men see women. And most importantly, we need to confront gender and racial injustice. In order for us to really have an impact and create safer communities.
And so as we do that, we're talking about playing the long game, trying to help people become better individuals, but also we have to play the short game in helping women who are in crisis right now. So Roy Rios, are there services out there?
Absolutely. I mean, Marta right there in the office, on the show, represents an organization that are equipped to help victims of domestic violence through emergency shelter, counseling, legal advocacy, the number of social referrals that occur outside of the family violence program that are used through community partners. And also another really important aspect of that is the primary prevention programming that is engaging communities and helping to build leadership in communities so that survivors find the help they need. We provide a level of universal education to communities so that if you're not reaching out to Family Violence Prevention Services, if you're not reaching out to the Texas Council on Family Violence, but you're reaching out to your best friend, to your church member, they have information on how to keep you safe, right, how to help you be safe, and where to find help.
Roy Rios, okay, we're going to take a break right now. Martha, is there a phone number you can give right now for anyone?
Absolutely. Crisis Line, 210-733-8810.
We're taking a break, and we're going to get to some callers. Domestic violence doesn't discriminate. Anyone can be a victim of domestic violence. Doesn't matter race, age, ethnicity, sexual orientation, economic status. It happens all over. We need to help one another and help people identify that they could be a victim of domestic violence. 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this quick break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about domestic violence awareness and prevention. It is a problem. It is getting worse here in Bexar County, in Texas, and across the nation. We want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. You can be anonymous as you call in. John is on the line. John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. We're completely neglecting a serious systemic defect in our society. We understand, women, men understand that the man is expected to be the major breadwinner. The men are more attracted when they have a high earnings capacity. And when the earning capacity is threatened, then the stress evolves. right? Now, if we understood that our income shouldn't just come from our labor capacity or our investments, but that natural resources belong to everybody. So if everyone, the woman and the man and everyone in the world, had income separate from any labor relationship or wages, the economic stresses would be reduced.
Okay. John, thank you for the call. Sorry for that scratchy line there. John brings up a couple of issues. One of them, he's talked about the male role, the expectation that the man is going to be the dominant income winner for the relationship, and somehow that's an issue. Let me go to, we've got a new guest. We're bringing another guest. This is Marisa Balderas. She is an attorney and director of legal services for Family Violence Prevention Services. And it becomes an issue of about economic power as well in these relationships. Frequently, a man will threaten the woman with homelessness and saying that if they don't comply with all of their wishes, and that's a form of abuse as well, Marisa?
Correct, and that's a concern of our clients who come forward and want to pursue a protective order against their spouse or their partner. And that is a concern because it may make the situation for a period of time worse. They may not understand that there are legal steps that they can take in order to get some temporary spousal maintenance and some other support to help them and encourage them to go ahead and move forward with a divorce process or with a protective order process. But that is a concern of our clients.
So Martha Pelaez with the Family Violence Prevention Services, when one partner is threatening the other partner with homelessness and I'm going to throw you out on the streets and no one's going to take care of you, and that is an empty threat?
It may be an empty threat for that victim.
Because there are services?
Absolutely. But that is what we want everybody to know. And it's part of our outreach. And this is what everybody should know. Services exist. You do not have to do it alone. In fact, there is safety planning. We will guide you through how to leave, how to do that in the safest of ways. When you arrive at the shelter, the horror should stay in the doorstep outside. And from that point on, we take over. So the emergency crisis brings in stability for both the children and the adults. And then we move into the second phase of our assistance, and we provide self-sufficiency. So it's education, is finding a new job for you, is honing your skills so that you can see the possibilities ahead of you. No one has to think that because someone is bringing $20 to provide soup, to put soup on the table that night, that she has to be battered. That is a myth.
Another caller, Kennedy. Kennedy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Well, thank you very much. I'm a little nervous, but I appreciate the opportunity.
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
Well, we live in a fairly upscale, middle-class neighborhood, and we're very concerned about a neighbor who we think is being abused by her husband physically as well as psychologically. And I'm not sure, and maybe Family Violence Prevention Services can help. I'm not sure what to do. How do we intervene and get her help? I can't walk up to her and say, hey, I think your husband's beating you up.
So Kennedy, real quick question. So you are seeing signs that this woman has suffered like a physical attack?
Some physical and more psychological. She's seems to be very withdrawn, very nervous, very isolated, very controlling on the husband's part.
Okay. Kennedy, thank you for your call. Marta Pelaez.
If I may suggest, if you can find a way to tactfully let her know that there are resources in the community, you've seen her somehow withdrawn and doesn't seem to be the same person, if there is anything that she needs to do about a situation that she may be going through, you don't have to know any more details. That's not what you're asking for. But just let her know that there are resources in the community. And I'm going to give out the number again, if you want to take it down and put it in her hand, 210-733-8810. Also, calling the police, and they will know what to do.
So you could ask the police to do a wellness check on someone?
They can do a wellness check. That is correct. The problem with that is that he may be there. He may be the one picking up the phone, and it might exacerbate a situation that otherwise could be handled differently.
Outside of the city of San Antonio, across the state of Texas, Roy Rios, are these efforts out there as well?
Absolutely. You know, I think one of the important aspects of prevention programming in any community is engaging the community as bystanders in violence prevention. And that's done in a number of different ways. And one of the great things about prevention is communities can really adopt this in ways that speaks to them and in ways that are safe. Because like Martha has pointed out, by approaching someone who you believe is being abused, you may think you're doing the right thing, but you could actually be decreasing the safety levels even more for that person. One of the great ways of engaging someone and ensuring that survivors have information around what is safe is by communities creating prevention programs that are really strength-based, that really speak to what are the community assets in this neighborhood. You speak to it being an upper-scale neighborhood. So what is available in that neighborhood in terms of communication, in terms of networking? Are there newsletters? Are there ways to disseminate information on a kind of like a global level in which everyone can get this information, for starters, so that she's not singled out in a place where her partner can see and maybe raise some red flags? It puts you in danger. And you're also ensuring that you're reaching other survivors that you may not be able to pinpoint who are being impacted by abuse.
Another caller? Okay.
I just want to say thank you to the good, wonderful neighbor who is so concerned.
Kennedy, thank you for calling in with that. And let's go to another caller, Francile.
I just have a question about statistics. I don't understand why it takes so long for statistics to be available. We have 2016 statistics available, but it's almost the end of 2018. Why aren't the 2017 statistics available earlier? I understand they wouldn't be available in January, but by June, they ought to be available. Thank you.
Okay, and I believe that we do have those statistics.
Right, the statistics, and in fact, you have a representative of the Texas Council on Family Violence who gathers the numbers, the yearly numbers for everybody. We do have 2017 statistics, and if we're talking
about... And they're stunning.
Yes, they are stunning. If we're talking about San Antonio, we had 11 fatalities so reported last year. What is even more stunning is that this year, this is October the 3rd, we are at 24 fatalities. So it is a record number, and it is extremely concerning.
Veronica is called in. Veronica, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to share a bit. I'm a mother of three, and I fell into a situation of a remarriage and everything, honeymoon phase starting off great, and then it became I'm doing all of this for you and your children. And I think, honestly, sometimes it can become a repeated cycle for the woman. I think most importantly, what any female out there dealing with any kind of situation like this would, I think therapies, I mean, I'm in the point of therapy needing to be something, because you have to, I have PTSD from just childhood alone, So it's like once you have grow up with, abuse towards you, and then first marriage doesn't work, you have the responsibility of your children, you hope for a second good, try, and then that doesn't work out. And that is usually, having kids is usually something that some men, unfortunately, will take advantage of and put it as a weight on you of, you know, they're doing all of this extra for you, you know, for what isn't theirs, you know. So I think an important thing, you know, for, you know, kind of to help the, you know, women out there to not be a repeat cycle for them is some kind of form of accessible, affordable therapy.
Veronica, thank you for your call. I appreciate that. What kind of help is out there for women like Veronica Marisa Barreras?
Well, our agency, we do provide counseling to the community free of charge. And thank you for your courage in calling and sharing your story with us. And unfortunately, it's not an uncommon story that children get maybe used to manipulate a situation by a perpetrator. But we do have counseling services available for children and adults for the victim of domestic violence. And so you're welcome to contact our agency and reach out to us and see how we can help you.
One thing that is important for everybody, especially the caller, not everybody wants to come to the shelter. Not everybody is ready to come to the shelter. There are non-residential services where just a mere consultation, a validation of your emotions is extremely therapeutic, and take it from there. So again, there are non-residential services that are parallel to those at the shelter, including legal services.
A question that comes up is, what is normal? Is this a normal relationship where we are constantly fighting and one person in a relationship is beating down on the other person in a relationship, or humiliating the other person, physically abusing them, emotionally abusing them? You know, that is not normal. That is not right. You do not have to live like that. You don't have to accept anything less than complete and total respect for who you are.
But that is part of the problem. Because what may be normal to you may not necessarily be normal to myself. So if you have grown, if you have been raised in a household where the normal, meaning the majority of the time, most of the behaviors are disrespectful and abusive, and you grow up like that, I can assure you the abnormality for that family, for that household, would be not to grow up to be abusive and or to understand that you need to be victimized in the future.
Right, but so, how do we elevate that?
Absolutely. So this is, you're talking about attitudes, you're talking about culture elements, you're talking about all kinds of factors that mediate domestic violence. So when it comes to attitudes, I know we shouldn't have the patience and we shouldn't stand by until an attitude is challenged and changed, because that takes a long time. It may take several generations before a patriarchal entitlement type of attitude is changed for something healthier. But what we do have is the law. What we do have is the opportunity to learn what the signs of domestic violence are. What we do have is the institutions that provide wraparound services, the systems approach, so that that person can also change that attitude towards what normal is.
And lifelines are available, how you can get help, how you can get out of a relationship that not only is driving you to the limits, but also could be putting your life in danger. We're going to talk more about that when we come back from the break. 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this.
Mexican Americans often find themselves embracing a cross-cultural lifestyle. For artists trying to relay their work to both worlds, it can provoke a sense of uncertainty.
So then I went back to that insecurity again, right? That the people who say I'm not Mexican enough are right.
Next time on Fronteras, a conversation with Reina Grande, author of A Dream Called Home. Download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin. Davies. Bexar County has the highest rate of reported domestic violence per capita in Texas, one of the highest in the nation. Texas, one in three women will be affected by domestic violence. We're talking about domestic violence awareness and prevention this afternoon on The Source. One note, we did promote that the police chief would have joined us today. He was scheduled to, he promised to, but then at the last minute, he told us he wouldn't be able to make it. So we're unable to include him in our discussion about what can be done to help women dealing with domestic violence. If you've got a question or a comment, your story, your experience could inspire others. It will help them realize what they can do, how they can get help, that they don't have to put up with that. Give us a call, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Let's go back to the phone lines with Elise. And Elise, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me. So I was in an emotionally abusive relationship, and I wanted to just kind of share with people like how they can help. Sometimes people might say, oh, well, he's not hitting you, so it's not that bad. So not to belittle the situation, emotions can be just as hurtful and can last longer than physical scars. Ask the person, how can I help you? Like if you have a brother or sister or someone that's being abused. Because, again, they had to make the choice to leave. They have to, you know, and it can be hard. Maybe they just need help finding a therapist right now, or they need some sort of baby step, not to assume the kind of help they're ready to accept. Because it can be hard to leave. It can take, like, 7 to 9 times before you actually leave. Eventually, you might decide, you know, you're going to choose to love yourself more than the other person for your own safety to leave. But, yeah, I mean, it's whatever you choose to accept in your life, whether you want to choose a loving relationship or you want to choose a hurtful one. It's up to the victim, and when they're ready to you know, make a change in their life, you know, they have to take that first step. You can't force anyone to accept help they're not ready to help, because then they'll go back to them.
Elise, when did you notice that you were in a in a relationship that was negative, you were part of a domestic violence relationship?
It was actually overly nice at first. I was like, wow, he's truly treating me really special. But power is taken like one step at a time. So like, you know, they might say this, like, do this or I'll leave you. That was pretty much the whole thing. He'd say, do this or that, or I'll leave you. He threatened to kill a dog towards the end. If I left him, he threatened to kill himself. He did things that made me lose my job, so then I was financially dependent on him. So it just kept getting worse. I was like at the point where I was like, I want to die, or I need to abandon my own house that's under my own title, because I just wanted to get out of there. And then I realized, you know, this is my house and my life. I shouldn't be the one that has to leave, and he's the one that needs to leave my house so I could take care of myself, just fundamental health basics, because my health is deteriorating because of the abuse the stress I was on. He wouldn't let me go to sleep at night. Like, I would just be like in a daze the next day because I would have to be awake, and it wouldn't bother him. I mean, so.
Yeah. Elise, thank you so much for your call. I do appreciate that. So Marisa Paldetas, the attorney and a director of legal services for Family Violence Prevention Services. Can you talk about how these types of relationships will escalate? They start off at one level, and little by little they get worse, and then there's the gaslighting that's also involved, where the abuser tries to play down the survivor's issues.
Correct. Excuse me. So you're correct, and thank you for calling and sharing that story, your story with us, and your courage in sharing that story. But that gaslighting and causing somebody to lose their job, that all goes along with the power and control that we see in domestic violence relationships. This person was doing what he needed to do to make the caller dependent on him, but also at the same time make it seem like it's her fault. You know, if she wasn't the way she was, these things wouldn't be happening to her, when in reality that's not the case at all. So that emotional abuse and the verbal abuse, that is domestic violence. It's you know, domestic violence goes beyond physical abuse. There's financial abuse, which she described that as well. in her situation. And so that goes along with the power and control dynamic that perpetrators will use as a tactic to keep their partner, the victim, to stay with them.
So James on Twitter says, stop talking about men as though they are only perpetrators of domestic violence. Ask your guest why there are so few resources for men who leave domestic violence, especially men trying to leave with children in Texas. So, Mata Pelayas, what is out there for men?
I very much welcome the opportunity to talk about it because shelter programs throughout the state that are HHSC funded are obliged to provide the very same level of resources and services to men as they are to women. And I have to tell the caller, have to share with the caller that right now we are sheltering several fathers with their children. It is in a different location than the one that we where we shelter the mothers with their children, but the very same level of services. All of the comprehensive array of resources are available to men. Now, I have to acknowledge that when it comes to domestic violence, again, the majority of the violence is perpetrated by men unto women. That is just a fact. Not that we want to see the inverse statistic realized, but that is the fact. However, when boys are socialized to contain their emotions, quote, man up, quote, to not to cry because that is a sissy thing, not to show weakness as perceived socially when they are emotional and they share certain things. So it makes it very, very difficult for an adult man growing in such a society to report that he is being abused by a woman.
Let me go to Bob. He has a similar comment. And Bob, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. And Bob, are you there? And Bob, we're going to move on to Diane. Diane, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. This is a very sad subject because a lot of times women like me, we go in circles. We want to leave, we go back. We leave, we go back because we believe the crazy that starts very early in the relationship, but it's very subtle. And ladies out there, you all know what I'm talking about. Don't wear makeup anymore. I don't want you to socialize with that person. We all have that same story. I survived a physical and emotional marriage by leaving. Make a plan. I left many times, but I always went back because I believed the lies. First of all, surround yourself with people who will tell you that's not true. If your mother looks at you when you says when you say to her, he hit me, and your mother's response is, well, what did you do? Do not talk to your mother anymore about this subject. She is not going to support you. Ladies, make a plan. Don't leave the situation in anger because you will go back.
All right. Thank you so much for that great call, Diane. A plan, a safety plan, especially when you feel like your life is in danger. We're hearing about 21 women so far this year in the uncompleted 2018 have died and were murdered by a male intimate partner. So this is serious. So how do you get a plan? How do you get out? What are the warning signs that it's time to go? And what are your legal alternatives? What's out there? Marisa Valdez, you're an attorney.
So thank you for bringing a plan, raising that issue, Diane. Definitely, you need a safety plan in place. And this is a plan that when you are ready to leave the relationship, it can be executed and you can safely get to your next location without that person knowing where you are and have your children with you and you know, in order for you to be safe. That may include packing a bag and having that bag somewhere hidden. That may include having a cell phone hidden away, maybe a phone that is a prepaid card cell phone. That may include having, you know, the availability to have a ride.
Important documents?
Yes, and absolutely, and any important documents, having all of those things ready to go when you are ready to leave your situation. That way you can leave safely. You have the documents that you need. If you need to speak to an attorney, you have those documents with you, and you can keep yourself safe and your children safe.
But should you be concerned about gathering evidence, having a digital trail of some sort that shows what your life was like? Because people will deny, people will say, my public face. I'm going to talk more about this when we come back from the break. Because what you're living inside your house can be very different from what people perceive on the outside. And right now, when we look at what's happening across the country, this atmosphere of not believing women who have gone through some abuse, what is that doing to our local community? And how can you protect yourself from that? And whether or not that is something that you need to be considering. So gathering evidence, gathering documents, having a plan, saving your life if you're in that sort of situation. The number to call is 210-614-8980. We're talking about domestic violence and awareness and prevention. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Bexar County has the highest rate of reported domestic violence per capita in Texas, one of the highest in the nation. What can we do to protect yourself if you think that domestic violence in your home has just reached a troubling level? How you can get help? So let's get some tips out there. The number is 210-614-8980. Marisa Valdez, we were talking about this before we went to break. How can you gather the evidence that you need in order to build that bulletproof case that shows people, yes, I was in a horrible domestic relationship?
So many of us have a smartphone, and we can take pictures on our phones. And if there's any injuries that you have ever endured, or if a victim has ever endured, she or he can take pictures of themselves, save those photos. Many times a perpetrator will break a cell phone because they know that that is the that person's way to contact the outside world. And so it's important. What we would also recommend is to open a second email that the perpetrator does not know about, and email yourself any, you know, files that you may have saved by way of recordings, of any, you know, incidents, photos, and also photos of the children and anything, you know, that's ever been broken in the home.
Can you take pictures of the documents that you have, like the birth certificates and everything else that
absolutely.
You...
Absolutely. Take pictures of those documents. That way you have them in case they do get left behind for whatever reason. And so that is a really good suggestion and something that we recommend to our clients as well. And also tell somebody, talk to somebody, have somebody that you can confide in and share all of this information with them as well.
Okay, let me go to Lisa on the line. And the number to call in is 210-614-8980. You can remain anonymous if you want to call in and tell us about your experience in domestic violence. Lisa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. My question is for a few of your guests. And also, what is law enforcement doing to help? A lot of times they're the first responders to the situation. I myself experienced stalking and was hesitant to call law enforcement. I finally did at the behest of my employer because this person kept showing up to my place of work. When the police officer then arrived, he refused to take a police report and essentially told me there was nothing that they could do about this. After that police officer left, I was really shook into the core. It wasn't until a good friend of mine, who is now my husband, had to put himself in harm's way in order to get this person to stop stalking me.
Lisa, thank you for your call. Roy Rios is the prevention manager for the Texas Council on Family Violence. What words do you have for Lisa?
You know, one of the things, absolutely, thank you for sharing your account of your experience with law enforcement. I think we hear those types of accounts all over the state and all over the country when we hear about law enforcement response. One thing that we're doing is our policy department is working directly with law enforcement leaders to increase the effectiveness of their response and develop policies that would enable law enforcement to respond appropriately and therefore really understand how to enact the laws and protections that are already in place to further support the safety of a survivor. One of the important aspects of this is really thinking about those community assets. What areas of your community, or rather, what areas of your law enforcement community can we connect with to provide training and support so that they truly understand what is available and how to truly respond to a survivor? At the council, we have a project called At the Table, in which we recruit members of the law enforcement community and other support systems to come together and look at cases just like this, in which maybe a ball was dropped, in which a survivor didn't feel safe or doesn't feel like they have allies in the law enforcement communities, and look at switching those systems up. A lot of times it's rooted in miscommunication or a lack of understanding around laws and systems. And so by us coming together as a community, we can really have conversations that lead towards increased survivor safety and increased accountability for the offender.
We have a national, or we had a National Violence Against Women's Act, which was allowed to expire just days ago. And as the nation was having this national conversation about sexual abuse, this happened. It's kind of now in a limbo zone in Capitol Hill in Austin. And I'm wondering, what does that Violence Against Women's Act, what does it do? And why is it that people need to be aware of this is something that we need to demand of our lawmakers to keep in effect? Mata Pelaez?
VAWA, Violence Against Women Act, was created, I believe, 1999, if I have the year correctly, I believe I do, to allocate funds to domestic violence programs so that those resources could further those efforts in communities. So the issue right now before us is the danger with everything that is going on, that certifying, recertifying VAWA may be politicized. I just hope that that is not the case. Domestic violence is a death threat to many people. It's a life or death situation for many people. It cannot be a Republican or Democrat issue for anybody, because it isn't. So we are just hopeful that our legislators understand it the same way, and that they, without any encumbrances, they recertify VAWA.
But there are national currents about attitudes and the way people see women who are in a domestic violence relationship, who are victims of sexual abuse. And you would have to say, just based on what's going on in the news today, what was said last night by the President of the United States, you have to wonder how much currency they're going to give to women who are the victims of an alleged sexual assault, and whether or not that weighs into what people see as their own personal option. Am I going to be believed? Am I going to be treated with respect? Am I going to be victimized again? These are things that people actually think about. I mean, and it all adds up into their decision making and whether or not they're going to stay or whether or not they're going to go, Marta.
Absolutely, I have to agree with everything that you have said. The impetus of a person that has been victimized, that impetus to come forth, seek help, educate herself as to what's available. How can I make this better for me? That impetus may come only once in a lifetime. And it takes a lot of courage to come forth. If that courage is not supported, it's not validated by a set of systems, but rather is being punished again by what we are seeing today on TV and the attitudes of people, not believing, re-victimizing, doubting you, then I know where victims are going to go. Nowhere. They're not going to be believed. Why go out there and expose yourselves and just risk the sharing of intimacy and everything else, putting themselves in danger? Because every time that a victim is out there disclosing, she may be upgrading that the reinforcing value of the abuser. So it is, that attitude can be infectious. And today I think that that is the problem that we have with everything that we have seen in the past 2 weeks, that there may be people who will not be coming forth because they don't want to go through the embarrassment and the re-victimization.
So Roy Rios at the Texas Council on Family Violence here in Bexar County, we saw the numbers sharply increase from 2014 of 5 murdered women in domestic violence relationships to 21 here in 2018. Is this sharp rise happening across the state?
We do see it, you know, it really ebbs and flows, but what we're seeing in major areas like San Antonio, like Dallas, Tarrant County, is that these numbers seem to continually be in the 20s, the 10s, and that's just too many. And like Martha has really highlighted, you know, when we have, you know, discourse around how survivors should report, and we politicize the issue rather than look at it as a public health issue, it really creates even more barriers for survivors who are already navigating tremendous barriers in the realm of economics, culture, if you're documented or undocumented. And, you know, we haven't really spoke much about the LGBTQ community, but the LGBTQ community, specifically trans survivors, you know, gay men, bisexual men, are navigating this issue at extremely high rates. And we're not having dialogue in an appropriate manner to really discuss what the issues are and how to increase safety in our communities.
And Martha Pelaez, real quickly, can you talk about some of the events that are coming up where people can find help or education?
My goodness. Events, let me talk about the Purple Run. This Saturday, we are engaging the entire community to come and share with others. We're going to have a memorializing part of the event. Last year, we had close to 1,200 people come with all of the members of the family, with the pets, to symbolize that now protective orders can include pets as well. So, and then Nutcracker Suites. We're there for everybody.
There are links to all of this on our website. Phone numbers, links to get help, information out there is available. Martha Pelaez is the CEO of the Family Violence Prevention Services. Roy Rios is with Texas Council on Family Violence. Marisa Valdez is the attorney and director of legal services for Family Violence Prevention Services. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks so much for tuning us in.
Thank you.